It was more than just a delicatessen. It was a sort of dwarf community centre and meeting place. The babble of voices stopped when Angua entered, bending almost double, but started up again with slightly more volume and a few laughs when Carrot followed. He waved cheerfully at the other customers. Then he carefully removed two chairs. It was just possible to sit upright if you sat on the floor.
"Very nice," said Angua. "Ethnic."
"I come in here quite a lot," said Carrot. "The food's good, and of course it pays to keep your ear to the ground."
"That'd certainly be easy here," said Angua, and laughed.
"Pardon?"
"Well, I mean, the ground is so much closer."
She felt a pit opening wider with every word. The noise level had suddenly dropped again.
Said Carrot, staring fixedly at her. "How can I put this? People are talking in dwarfish, but they are listening in human."
"Sorry."
Carrot smiled and then nodded at the cook behind the counter and cleared his throat noisily.
"I think I might have a throat sweet somewhere," Angua began.
"I was ordering breakfast," said Carrot.
"You know the menu off by heart?"
"Oh, yes, but it's written on the wall as well."
Angua turned and looked again at what she'd thought were merely random scratches.
"It's Ogham," said Carrot, "an ancient and poetic runic script whose origins are lost in the mists of time, but it's thought to have been invented even before the gods."
"Gosh, what does it say?"
Carrot really cleared his throat this time.
"Sauce, eggs, beans and rat, 12p. Sauce, rat and fried slice, 10p. Cream cheese rat, 9p. Rat and beans, 8p. Rat and ketchup, 7p. Rat, 4p.
"Why does ketchup cost almost as much as the rat?" said Angua.
"Have you tried rat without ketchup?" said Carrot. "Anyway, I ordered you dwarf bread. Have you ever eaten dwarf bread?"
"No."
"Everyone should try it once," said Carrot. He appeared to consider this.
"Most people do," he added.
Rat and cream cheese is only one of the famous Discworld dishes available in cosmopolitan Ankh-Morpork. According to the Guild of Merchants publication, Welcome to Ankh-Morpork City of 1,000 Surprises, also to be bought in its well-stuffed emporia are slumpy, jammy devils, ficon haddock, distressed pudding, clouty dumplings, and not to be forgotten, the knuckle sandwich, made from finest pig knuckles. Not for something, is it said, for a true taste of Ankh-Morpork, try a knuckle sandwich. Clouty dumpling, not to be confused with the Scottish clouty dumpling, which is a kind of suet pudding full of fruit. The Ankh-Morpork version sits on the tongue like finest meringue, and on the stomach like a concrete bowling ball. 3.5 minutes after waking up, Captain Samuel Vimes, Nightwatch, staggered up the last few steps to the roof of the city's opera house, gasped for breath, and threw up Allegro Ma Non Troppo. Then he leaned against the wall, waving his crossbow vaguely in front of him. There wasn't anyone else on the roof. There were just the leads stretching away, drinking up the morning sunlight. It was already almost too hot to move. When he felt a bit better, he poked around among the chimneys in the skylight. But there were a dozen ways down and 1,000 places to hide. He could see right into his room from here. Come to that, he could see into the rooms of most of the city. Catapult. No. Oh, well, at least there'd been witnesses. He walked to the edge of the roof and peered over.
"Hello there," he said.
He blinked. It was 6 stories down, and not a sight to look at on a recently emptied stomach.
"Could you come up here, please?" he said.
Vimes stood back. There was a scrape of stone, and a gargoyle pulled itself laboriously over the parapet, moving like a cheap stop-motion animation. He didn't know much about gargoyles. Carrot had said something once about how marvellous it was, an urban troll species that had evolved a symbiotic relationship with gutters, and he had admired the way they funnelled run-off water into their ears and out through the fine sieves in their mouths. They were probably the strangest species on the disc. Wrong. Vimes didn't travel much except on foot and knew little of the Lunker suicide thrush, for example, or the shadowing lemur, which exists in only 2 dimensions and eats mathematicians or the quantum weather butterfly. But it is possible that the strangest and possibly saddest species on Discworld is the hermit elephant. This creature, lacking the thick hide of its near relatives, lives in huts, moving up and building extensions as its size increases. It's not unknown for a traveller on the plains of Hawanderland to wake up in the morning in the middle of a village that wasn't there the night before. You didn't get many birds nesting on buildings colonised by gargoyles, and bats tended to fly around them. "What's your name, friend?"
Ogwai.
Vime's lips moved as he mentally inserted all those sounds unobtainable to a creature whose mouth was stuck permanently open. Cornice, overlooking, Broadway. A gargoyle's personal identity was intimately bound up with its normal location, like a limpet.
"Well now, Cornice," he said, "do you know who I am?"
"Ooh,"
said the gargoyle sullenly. Vimes nodded. "It sits up here in all weather, straining gnats through its ears," he thought. "People like that don't have a crowded address book. Even whelks get out more."
"I'm Captain Vimes of the Watch."
The gargoyle pricked up its huge ears.
Ich,
Vimes worked this one out too and blinked.
"You know Corporal Carrot?"
Vimes snorted. "I grew up here," he thought, "and when I walk down the street, everyone says, 'Who's that glum bugger?' And Carrot's been here a few months and everyone knows him, and he knows everyone. Everyone likes him. I'd be annoyed about that if he wasn't so likeable."
"You live right up here," said Vimes, interested despite the more pressing problem on his mind. "How come you know Carrot?
Is
he? Did someone else come here just now? Did you see who it was?
Holophern Street, Vimes translated. Whoever it was would be well away by now.
Iagaik,
Cornice volunteered.
Iaurk-ik.
A what?
Iaurk. Ooh-och. Ang. Ok. Och. Okik. Ang.
Oh. Fireworks.
Ech. Ek-wai-ek.
A fireworks stick? Like a rocket stick?
Oh. Ee-ok. A kick, oink, it goes bang.
You point it and it goes bang.
Eek!
Vimes scratched his head. Sounded like a wizard's staff, but they didn't go bang.
Well, thanks, he said. You've been, eggy elkhorn.
He turned back down towards the stairs. Someone had tried to kill him, and the patrician had warned him against investigating the theft from the Assassin's Guild.
Theft, he said.
Up until then, Vimes hadn't been certain there had been a theft. And then, of course, there are laws of chance. They play a far greater role in police procedure than narrative causality would like to admit. For every murder solved by the careful discovery of a vital footprint or a cigarette end, 100 failed to be resolved because the wind blew some leaves the wrong way or it didn't rain the night before. So many crimes are solved by a happy accident, by the random stopping of a car, by an overheard remark, by someone of the right nationality happening to be within 5 miles of the scene of the crime without an alibi. Even Vimes knew about the power of chance. His sandal clinked against something metallic. "And this," said Corporal Carrot, "is the famous commemorative arch celebrating the Battle of Crumhorn. We won it, I think. It's got over 90 statues of famous soldiers. It's something of a landmark."
"Should have put up a statue to the accountants," said a doggy voice behind Angua. "First battle in the universe where the enemy were persuaded to sell the weapons."
"Where is it, then?" said Angua, still ignoring Gaspode. "Ah, yes, that's the problem," said Carrot. "Excuse me, Mr. Scant. This is Mr. Scant, official keeper of the monuments. According to ancient tradition, his pay is $1 a year and a new vest every Hogswatch day." There was an old man sitting on a stool at the road junction, with his hat over his eyes. He pushed it up.
"Afternoon, Mr. Carrot. You'll be wanting to see the triumphal arch, will you?
Yes, please. Carrot turned back to Angua. Unfortunately, the actual practical design was turned over to Bloody Stupid Johnson. The old man eventually produced a small cardboard box from a pocket and reverentially took off the lid.
Where is it?
Just there, said Carrot, behind that little bit of cotton wool.
Oh.
I'm afraid that for Mr. Johnson, accurate measurements were something that happened to other people. Mr. Scant closed the lid. He also did the Quirm Memorial, the Hanging Gardens of Ankh, and the Colossus of Moorpork, said Carrot.
The Colossus of Moorpork? Said Angua.
Mr. Scant held up a skinny finger.
Ah, he said, don't go away.
He started to pat his pockets.
Got him here somewhere.
Didn't the man ever design anything useful?
Well, he did design an ornamental cruet set for Mad Lord Snapcase, said Carrot, as they strolled away.
He got that right?
Not exactly, but here's an interesting fact. Four families lived in a salt shaker, and we use the pepper pot for storing grain. Angua smiled. Interesting facts. Carrot was full of interesting facts about Ankh Morpork. Angua felt she was floating uneasily on a sea of them. Walking along a street with Carrot was like having three guided tours rolled into one. Now here, said Carrot, is the Beggars Guild. They're the oldest of the guilds. Not many people know that.
Is that so? People think it'd be the Fools or the Assassins. Ask anyone. They'll say the oldest guild in Ankh Morpork is certainly the Fools Guild, or the Assassins Guild. But they aren't. They're quite recent. There's been a Beggars Guild for centuries.
Really? Said Angua, weakly. In the last hour, she'd learned more about Ankh Morpork than any reasonable person wanted to know. She vaguely suspected that Carrot was trying to court her, but instead of the usual flowers or chocolate, he seemed to be trying to gift-wrap a city. And despite all her better instincts, she was feeling jealous. Of a city? Ye gods, I've known him a couple of days. It was the way he wore the place. You expected him any moment to break into the kind of song that has suspicious rhymes and phrases like "my kind of town" and "I want to be part of it" in it. The kind of song where people dance in the street and give the singer apples and join in and a dozen lowly match girls suddenly show amazing choreographical ability and everyone acts like a cheery, lovable citizen instead of the murderous, evil-minded, self-centred individual they suspect themselves to be. But the point was that if Carrot had erupted into a song and dance, people would have joined in. Carrot could have jollied a circle of standing stones to form up behind him and do a rumba. "There's some very interesting old statuary in the main courtyard," he said, "including a very good one of Jimmy, the god of beggars. I'll show you. They won't mind." He rapped on the door.
"You don't have to," said Angua.
"It's no trouble." The door opened. Angua's nostrils flared. There was a smell. A beggar looked Carrot up and down, his mouth dropped open. "It's Cumbling Michael, isn't it?" said Carrot in his cheery way. The door slammed. "Well, that wasn't very friendly," said Carrot.
"Stinks, don't it?"
said a nasty little voice from somewhere behind Angua. While she was in no mood to acknowledge Gaspode, she found herself nodding. Although the beggars were an entire cocktail of odours, the second biggest one was fear, and the biggest of all was blood. The scent of it made her want to scream. There was a babble of voices behind the door, and it swung open again. This time there was a whole crowd of beggars there. They were all staring at Carrot.
"All right, Your Honour,"
said the one hailed as Cumbling Michael.
"We give in. How did you know?"
"How did we know what?"
Carrot began, but Angua nudged him.
"Someone's been killed here," she said.
"Who's she?"
said Cumbling Michael.
"Lance Constable Angua is a man of the watch," said Carrot.
said Gaspode.
"I must say you people are getting better," said Cumbling Michael. "We only found the poor thing a few minutes ago."
Angua could feel Carrot opening his mouth to say who. She nudged him again.
"You'd better take us to him," she said.
He turned out to be... For one thing, he turned out to be a she... in a rag-strewn room on the top floor. Angua knelt beside the body. It was very clearly a body now. It certainly wasn't a person. A person normally had more head on their shoulders.
"Why?" she said. "Who'd do such a thing?"
Carrot turned to the beggars clustered around the doorway.
"Who was she?"
Lattice Nibs, said Cumbling Michael. She was just the lady's maid to Queen Molly.
Angua glanced up at Carrot.
Queen?
They sometimes call the head beggar king or queen, said Carrot. He was breathing heavily. Angua pulled the maid's velvet cloak over the corpse.
Just the maid, she muttered.
There was a full-length mirror in the middle of the floor, or at least the frame of one. The glass was scattered like sequins around it. So was the glass from a window pane. Carrot kicked aside some shards. There was a groove in the floor, and something metallic embedded in it.
Cumbling Michael, I need a nail and a length of string, said Carrot very slowly and carefully.
His eyes never left the speck of metal. It was almost as if he expected it to do something.
I don't think, the beggar began.
Carrot reached out without turning his head and picked him up by his grubby collar without apparent effort.
A length of string, he repeated, and a nail.
Yes, Corporal Carrot.
And the rest of you go away, said Angua.
They goggled at her.
Do it, she shouted, clenching her fists, and stop staring at her.
The beggars vanished.
It'll take a while to get the string, said Carrot, brushing aside some glass. They'll have to beg it off someone, you see.
He drew his knife and started digging at the floorboards with care. Eventually he excavated a metal slug, flattened slightly by its passage through the window, the mirror, the floorboards and certain parts of the late lettuce nibs that had never been designed to see daylight. He turned it over and over in his hand.
Angua?
Yes?
How did you know there was someone dead in here?
I just had a feeling.
The beggars returned, so unnerved that half a dozen of them were trying to carry one piece of string. Carrot hammered the nail into the frame under the smashed pane to hold one end of the string. He stuck his knife in the groove and affixed the other end of string to it. Then he lay down and sighted up the string.
Good grief!
What is it?
It must have come from the roof of the opera house.
Yes, so?
That's more than 200 yards away.
Yes.
The thing went an inch into oak floor.
Did you know the girl at all? Said Angua, and felt embarrassed at asking.
Not really.
I thought you knew everyone.
She was just someone I'd see around. The city's full of people who you just see around.
Why do beggars need servants?
You don't think my hair gets like this by itself, dear, do you?
There was an apparition in the doorway. Its face was a mass of sores. There were warts, and they had warts, and they had hair on. It was possibly female, but it was hard to tell under the layers and layers of rags. The aforementioned hair looked as though it had been permed by a hurricane, with treacle on its fingers. Then it straightened up.
Oh, Corporal Carrot, didn't know it was you.
The voice was normal now, no trace of whine or wheedle. The figure turned and brought her stick down hard on something in the corridor.
Naughty boy, Dribbling Sidney, you could have told I it were Corporal Carrot.
Grr!
The figure strode into the room.
And who's your lady friend, Mr. Carrot?
This is Lance Constable Angua. Angua, this is Queen Molly of the Beggars.
For once, Angua noted, someone wasn't surprised to find a female in the watch. Queen Molly nodded at her as one working woman to another. The Beggars Guild was an equal opportunity non-employer.
Good day to you. You can't spare I $10,000 for a small mention, could you?
No.
Just asking.
Queen Molly prodded at the gown.
What was it, Corporal?
I think it's a new kind of weapon.
We heard the glass smash and there she was, said Molly. Why would anyone want to kill her?
Carrot looked at the velvet cloak.
Whose room is this? He said.
Mine. It's my dressing room.
Then whoever did it wasn't after her. He was after you, Molly. Some in rags and some in tags and one in a velvet gown. It's in your charter, isn't it? Official dress of the chief beggar. She probably couldn't resist seeing what it looked like on her.
Right gown, right room, wrong person. Molly put her hand to her mouth, risking instant poisoning.
Assassination?
Carrot shook his head.
That doesn't sound right.
They like to do it up close. It's a caring profession, he added bitterly.
What should I do?
Burying the poor thing would be a good start. Carrot turned the metal slug over in his fingers, then he sniffed it.
Fireworks, he said.
Yes, said Angua.
And what are you going to do? Said Queen Molly.
You're a watchman, aren't you? What's happening? What are you going to do about it?
Cuddy and Detritus were proceeding along Phaedra Road. It was lined with tanneries and brick kilns and timber yards, and was not generally considered a beauty spot, which was why Cuddy suspected they'd been given it to patrol, to get to know the city. It got them out of the way. Sergeant Colon thought they made the place look untidy. There was no sound but the clink of his boots and the thump of Detritus's knuckles on the ground. Finally, Cuddy said,
"I just want you to know that I don't like being teamed up with you any more than you'd like being teamed up with me."
"Right.
But if we're going to have to make the best of it, there'd better be some changes, okay?"
"Like what?"
"Like, it's ridiculous you not being able to count. I know trolls can count. Why can't you?"
"Can count.
How many fingers am I holding up, then?"
Detritus squinted.
"Two."
"Okay. Now how many fingers am I holding up?"
"Two and one more."
"So, two and one more is?"
Detritus looked panicky. This was calculus territory.
"Two and one more is three."
"Two and one more is three. Now how many?"
"Two and two."
"That's four."
"Four."
"Now how many?"
Cuddy tried eight fingers.
Two, four."
Cuddy looked surprised. He'd expected many, or possibly lots.
"What's a two for?"
"A two and a two and a two and a two."
Cuddy put his head on one side. He said.
"Okay, a 2-4 is what we call an 8.
"Eight."
"You know,"
said Cuddy, subjecting the troll to a long, critical stare,
"you might not be as stupid as you look. This is not hard. Let's think about this. I mean, I'll think about this, and you can join in when you know the words."
Vimes slammed the watchhouse door behind him. Sergeant Colon looked up from his desk. He had a pleased expression.
"What's been happening, Fred?"
Colon took a deep breath.
"Interesting stuff, Captain. Me and Nobby did some detectoring up at the Fool's Guild. I've written it all down, what we found out. It's all here, a proper report."
"Fine. All written down, look. Properly. Punctuation and everything.
Well done.
It's got commas and everything. Look.
I'm sure I shall enjoy it, Fred.
And the, and Cuddy and Detritus have found out stuff too. Cuddy's done a report too, but it's not got so much punctuation as mine."
"How long have I been asleep?"
"6 hours.
Vimes tried to make a mental space for all this and failed.
"I've got to get something inside me," he said. "Some coffee or something, and then the world will somehow be better."
Anyone strolling along Phaedra Road might have seen a troll and a dwarf apparently shouting at one another in excitement.
"A 2, 32, and 8, and a 1.
"See? How many bricks in that pile?"
Pause.
"A 16, an 8, a 4, a 1.
"Remember what I said about dividing by 8 and 2?
Longer pause.
29.
"Right.
Right!
"You can get there."
"I can get there!"
"You're a natural at counting to 2.
"I'm a natural at counting to 2.
"If you can count to 2, you can count to anything."
"If I can count to 2, I can count to anything."
"And then the world is your mollusk."
"My mollusk? What's a mollusk?"
Angua had to scurry to keep up with Carrot.
"Aren't we going to look in the opera house?" she said.
"Later. Anyone up there'll be long gone by the time we get there. We must tell the captain."
"You think she was killed by the same thing as Hammerhock?"
"Yes."
"There are 9er birds."
"That's right."
"There are 1 bridge."
"Right."
"There are 4 10 boats."
"All right."
"There are 1,364 bricks."
"Okay."
"There are..."
"I should give it a rest now. You don't want to wear everything out by counting."
"There are 1 running man."
"What? Where?"
Sham Hager's coffee was like molten lead, but it had this in its favour. When you drunk it, there was this overwhelming feeling of relief that you'd got to the bottom of the cup.
That, said Vimes, was a bloody awful cup of coffee, Champ.
Right, said Harger.
I mean, I've drunk a lot of bad coffee by time, but that was like having a saw dragged across my tongue. How long had it been boiling?
What's today's date?
Said Harger, cleaning a glass. He was generally cleaning glasses. No one ever found out what happened to the clean ones.
August the 15th.
What year?
Sham Harger smiled, or at least moved various muscles around his mouth. Sham Harger had run a successful eatery for many years by always smiling, never extending credit, and realizing that most of his customers wanted meals properly balanced between the four food groups, sugar, starch, grease, and burnt crunchy bits.
I'd like a couple of eggs, said Vimes, with the yolks real hard but the whites so runny they drip like treacle. And I want bacon, that special bacon all covered with bony nodules and dangling bits of fat, and a slice of fried bread, the kind that makes your arteries go clang just by looking at it.
Tough order, said Harger.
You managed it yesterday, and give me some more coffee, black as midnight on a moonless night.
Harger looked surprised. That wasn't like Vimes.
How black's that, then? He said. Oh, pretty damn black, I should think.
Not necessarily.
What?
You get more stars on a moonless night, stands to reason. They show up more. It can be quite bright on a moonless night.
Vimes sighed.
An overcast moonless night, he said.
Harger looked carefully at his coffee pot.
Cumulus or cirronimbus?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
You get city lights reflected off cumulus because it's low-lying, see? Mind you can get high-altitude scatter off the ice crystals in
a moonless night, said Vimes in a hollow voice, that is as black as that coffee.
Right.
And a donut.
Vimes grabbed Harger's stained vest and pulled him until they were nose to nose.
A doughnut as doughnutty as a doughnut made of flour, water, one large egg, sugar, a pinch of yeast, cinnamon to taste, and a jam, jelly, or rat filling, depending on national or species preference. Okay? Not as doughnutty as something in any way metaphorical, just a doughnut. One doughnut.
A doughnut?
Yes, you only had to say.
Harger brushed off his vest, gave Vimes a hurt look, and went back into the kitchen.